I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians.
So I'm really glad to have both you guys here, because I wanted to talk about something that I think I needed to have both of you guys here as sort of topic subject experts, and that is the weird chronology of Star Trek Starfleet uniforms.
Yeah.
Is that they have never made sense in the history of the Star Trek franchise. I think the way that they make the most sense are budgetary reasons. Like, if you watch the original series, although the principal characters wear sort of the two-piece velour, color-coded division shirts and black, like, bell-bottom slacks and boots, and some of the female characters wear sort of the one-piece skirt. Those uniforms make sense. They're kind of consistent. But then you have all these background characters that are wearing...
The one-piece short skirt doesn't necessarily make sense in terms of, like, being a military uniform.
I guess it makes sense 1960s Gene Roddenberry.
Sure, right. Yeah.
I heard somebody once say that you could always tell whenever Gene Roddenberry wrote something because it would always be the most sexist thing you'd ever read. But... there's a consistency. It makes no sense as a military uniform at all. Because, I mean, you have to imagine there's women on the away team that you're sending down as part of a security group. And it just would suck to be running around in a miniskirt having to fight the Gorn.
They might have to kneel to pick something up at some point.
it's not fun.
You also forget that the, or maybe you didn't forget. No one forgets. Never forgets. When they show a uniform from another ship, it's literally just the same uniforms with a different logo, you know, because the Enterprise has their own and whatever other ships have their own as well.
Yeah, and then the symbol just became so iconic that, you know, post the motion picture, everybody has the Enterprise emblem. Mm-hmm. It's so weird when you look at the emblems that you have on other ships. It is so fucking weird. And it's so random. And they seem like you're just pulling it out of their ass. So that's a kind
the
of...
weird, like, flower shapes. And...
the flower shape one is just so fucking weird. And then there's one where it's just like this weird rectangle with dots on it. And it's very odd. But there's a consistency. But then you also have a lot of these background characters. And this is where the budget comes in. Where the background characters are just wearing color-coded jumpsuits. Like a lot of the background guys in the engineering. So it makes sense. There's a consistency there. I know that they can't afford to make a velour uniform for every single person walking down a hall. So you gotta cut some corners because you only have so much money. But
when you get to season 3 and the budget's low and then everyone in the background is wearing a Canadian tuxedo, right?
Yeah. But I look at, like, you know, the same thing happens in TNG as well.
Also the reason why they have, like, Nazi planet and Old West planet and Roman gladiator planet, because they're just like
the Paramount lot.
Yeah, we've got all these costumes. We're not
there on the lot.
We're not going to make any more.
You've got all these things. Of course, you're going to have a cowboy planet. And the fact that they have the fake cowboy planet with the sort of the front of the building is all there is. I bet feels like they kind of really creative go around with a low budget. And that's a really cool one. The idea of, let's just own the fact. Let's make the sky red to really hype up the fact that this is supposed to be fake. But TNG has this too, where, you know, the first season, everyone's wearing these one-piece spandex uniforms. And then from 3 onward, they're going to get the two-piece ones with a collar that everyone recognizes. But for a long time, background and minor characters who don't get lines still have those spandex one pieces. And that's all budgetary.
It's particularly obvious because they have the extra stripe on the collar you can pick out on a background character, even if it's not quite in focus.
Yeah, and even when they sort of they kind of make an adjustment to that and give them the standard collar, you can still tell that it's the spandex one. That those uniforms, they still have a ton of those left over. But here's the weird one. When they created Deep Space Nine, rather than just use this huge catalog of all of these TNG uniforms that they have, Star Trek always feels the need with a new show to come up with their signature uniform, even though they don't need to. So Deep Space Nine now has this sort of utility jumpsuit where the color for your division and the black have been reversed. So now you're wearing a black jumpsuit with the division colors on your shoulders. And I just wonder... I mean, what is the drive that every time there's a new Trek show that we need to come up with a new uniform, even if these uniforms are technically happening at the same time as these other uniforms on another show?
I think at least my headcanon for it is that, like, the captain has some say in what uniform is worn on the ship, and that there are, so maybe there's different uniform variations active at any given time, but this is this type of uniform we wear on a space station versus this is the type of uniform we wear on a starship.
Sure.
You know, a field uniform versus a, you know, dress uniform.
And then you get to Star Trek Generations, and half of the crew are wearing DS9 uniforms.
Just because they had that many more actors that they were paying. They just had to use the costume departments from both shows.
They're like, why? Who is it? Yeah. We're in the middle of transition here.
That movie is in utter chaos as far as uniforms go. There are people who wear both uniforms.
That movie is
in
utter chaos for everything, but for uniforms.
Well, then they introduced a whole new uniform for First Contact and then immediately brought it to Deep Space Nine, and you can see in the first couple of episodes that Sisko is wearing Riker's, Jonathan Frakes' uniform, and Jonathan Frakes is like a foot taller. And so it's like the gray part of it is supposed to only be your shoulders, like comes down, like practically like below his pecs. So the comm badge is on the wrong part of the uniform.
That is so weird.
And then two episodes later, it's fixed.
But then at the same time, you have Voyager, which has gone fully over to the old school DS9 uniforms, the black and color division jumpsuits. Mm-hmm. But now they're stuck on the other side of the galaxy, and they didn't get the memo. So they're still using a uniform from an older part of the show. So there are shows that are happening at the same time that are not quite matching up. And mm-hmm. Voyager has a better excuse. But then they do make contact with the Alpha Quadrant, and they go, we kind of like these uniforms better, and nobody's going to inspect us.
Well,
so.
I think it was probably a smart way to make those series visually distinct, which is probably a reason that they did it with the Deep Space Nine uniforms in the first place. The only anomaly there is that they didn't make a third uniform for Voyager in the first place, or continue to use the TNG uniform at that point for Voyager. But I don't know if it was because they wanted those uniforms were cheaper to make or what, but
they look more comfortable. I say they seem to be made out, the uniforms that you have, the sort of early DS9 Voyager uniform, the jumpsuit, looks a lot more comfortable than the First Contact uniform. It looks like it's made out of lighter fabric. Mm-hmm. It looks more flexible. It looks like it breathes better.
Yeah, this one weird thing is, I'm pretty sure both of you were probably had been to the Seattle Cinerama before it closed down over the, mm-hmm. Before the pandemic. And they would rotate in and out Paul Allen's sort of sci-fi fantasy costume collection that he had there. And when you actually get close and look at a costume, you realize how fragile and frail it all looks. And I guess part of it is you don't ever really want to dress your actors in a lot of fabric because they're under lights and it can make them hot. So if you can, you want to make it really thin and highly textured so it picks up light, right? But you look at them and they look, something like the Borg Queen costume that Alice Krieger wore in First Contact. You look at it and it looks so fucking cool in the movie, and then you get close to it and you're like, oh, it looks like cheapo fabric. And it's kind of incredible how well good costumes end up doing that, as they make something that is, the layer of like a kid's Halloween uniform look like it's this big, sturdy
thing. When you look at
it
in a case, you're looking at it with bright fluorescent lights shining on it, and it's going to reveal every imperfection. And then in the movie, it's backlit. And so you see the outline of something without seeing all the imperfection.
Right. It's pretty amazing. Costuming is awesome in that respect, as it can be like, it can make you have the impression of something that doesn't really exist and make the character feel a certain way, even though they probably all feel like they're wearing spandex, I imagine, wearing t-shirt material.
So you haven't even gotten into at this point yet the newer Star Trek series.
It's been a tidal wave of new uniforms.
And it's the uniform budget has just exploded exponentially. You've got like the characters on Discovery wearing a uniform that bears no resemblance to anything that's come before it, except for maybe the Enterprise uniforms, because they start out all blue with like gold, silver, and bronze striping on them instead of red, yellow, and blue.
I like that division colors.
And I do too, and it's not a bad looking uniform. And then the crew of the Enterprise shows up, and they're wearing uniforms similar, not the same, obviously, but more textured, they're more modern, but similar in the color blocking to the original series uniforms.
Right.
And then that series takes off wearing that uniform, and then Discovery moves to the future, where everyone's wearing a yet a different uniform, and so they adopt a version of that uniform when they become assimilated into that fleet in the very final episode of that like third season. And then the fourth season, they decided, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do something entirely different.
Yeah.
So they had created like a whole set of uniforms for the cast to wear in like literally one shot of the final episode of that season. Then they wiped them out because they were all like gray and sort of futuristic looking, and they just looked terrible. So they replaced them in the next episode.
I think that's what I've kind of learned from Star Trek uniforms, is the ones that I tend to like the most have a punch of color in them. Mm-hmm. That the ones that don't have it really stand out. And I don't mean that they have to be, the division colors have to be super bright, but even when you have a standard uniform color, like the Discovery blue uniforms mm-hmm. or the red Kirk movie uniforms, mm-hmm. blue and red stand out. They kind of punch off the screen. Mm-hmm. And the two colors that don't punch off the screen are like gray and brown.
Well, particularly against the gray and brown sets that they're walking around on.
Yeah.
Right.
The gray and beige.
And that kind of hurts the, like, I like the uniforms from the motion picture, but they need to be more colorful. And I think that there was this desire, and maybe this kind of mirrors how, like, you look at cars nowadays versus in the 80s. I used to see orange cars all the time. Nowadays, there's like five colors. When I bought my most recent car, I have a Subaru Outback, mm-hmm. and this is the first time I've ever bought a new car, and it's the first time I've ever been able to choose the color of my car. But there really aren't that many choices. As standard, there's like white, black, silver, maroon, and dark blue. And that's kind of it.
And then if you want a color other than that, it's like a $4,000 extra or something.
Yeah. So I think that there was that same kind of mentality going into the 1970s. As they like, well, bright seems gaudy. And it's, you know, these bright gold, blue, red uniforms. We can't do that in the 1970s. We need something that's a bit more beige, a bit more gray, a bit more white. And some of them, like Kirk's Admiral uniforms, still look amazing. Mm-hmm. And some of them, you know, like Kirk has like a tight, like, it's like a short sleeve shirt one. And I think the best description of I've ever heard, what is the name of that Tim something? He's like the fashion guru guy. He used to have a show on TV.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I know who you mean.
He's got a catchphrase that I don't remember. It's like, let's get it done or let's make it work.
I once saw a YouTube video, and I can't find it anymore, where somebody, another fashion guy who was a Star Trek fan, was just going through Star Trek uniforms with this guy and said, what do you think of this one? And his description of Kirk wearing the tight short sleeve shirt, white outfit, he said, he looks like the guy who teaches you how to play tennis on a cruise ship. And I'm like, I can't really deny that. And the other one is the one piece sort of uniforms they had looked pretty good most of the time until somebody raised their arms above their head. And then it created this hard V crease that went up from your crotch practically to your armpits. And they showed a picture of the scene where, you know, the bridge is sort of a mess and Kirk comes on board for the first time. Everyone's scrambling to fix things. And there's a guy standing on like a levitating platform and his arms are straight up in the air and that crease is there. And he shows this, I really wish I remembered his name, Tim something. And he just goes,
Tim Gunn.
Yeah. Tim Gunn goes, oh, God. When he sees that his arms above his head, he's like, why would they? He goes, if you're going to do that, why wouldn't put his arms up? And it's things like that. And it's funny because I think they also have a couple of videos where they show him superhero costumes, too. Tim Gunn, by the way, loves Spider-Man's costume.
Yeah, nice.
But the stuff that is just kind of crazy is, you know, the stuff that doesn't have the division colors either prominent or at least a base color. Like, I love the original Discovery uniforms so much that I'm disappointed that they didn't hold them back a little bit, put them in the standard sort of Pike uniforms at the beginning, and then once they're in the future, give them those blue uniforms because they're so fucking cool.
Well, I don't think that was ever part of the plan. I think the uniform was intended to be like somewhere in between, like as an evolution from Enterprise, because in Enterprise they're all wearing
the submarine suits.
Yeah, they're the all blue uniforms with the colored piping, and that uniform I really like, the kind with the, they look like the space, you know, explorers in space. They have the mission patch on their sleeve, like a shuttle astronaut would.
Yeah,
and so going from all blue and just kind of updating it in that way, I think made sense at the time.
But I like it so much that I wish that they'd kept it. Now that they're out of that era completely and not using that uniform, I just go, man, That would have been a really cool future uniform for those characters to use.
And the funny thing is that Discovery was in a weird place for its production design because it had to straddle the line between this is a story that's contemporaneous with TOS, but not in the Kelvin universe. Mm-hmm. But it sort of has to have the same visual signifiers that the J.J. Abrams movies had. It kind of has to have its feet in both worlds. And so in that respect, like, it was a good in between. You know, it was a good sort of like assimilation of both.
I think that there's also probably an element of bringing Star Trek back on TV at that point. There might have been some hesitation to do the bright red, bright yellow, bright blue uniforms. Like, everything in a modern context is often not necessarily more toned down, but more, I don't know, more uniform across the characters.
It feels kind of like that's the mentality for the motion picture, which is like, well, we're afraid of doing something too gaudy.
It feels like the mentality behind the first X-Men movie.
Yes.
Where they're afraid they make a joke out of putting somebody in a bright yellow costume, yellow spandex. And when you look at that movie now, it's like, it looks super dated because everybody's wearing like black leather fetish outfits.
Yeah.
And now that you see the production in the Marvel universe and, you know, and X-Men, where they are wearing those colored costumes, and it makes those characters so much more unique and distinct.
You pop off the screen.
And they pop off the screen and they become larger than life. And after a couple of seasons, or, you know, after a season and a half or so, Discovery did introduce those pops of color, and then they got such a positive response that I think they decided to go in that direction.
Every so often you get a uniform that I really like, but it's a uniform for an era that doesn't get a TV show. There's these kind of lost eras of Star Trek. Like, the first lost era of Star Trek is everything in between the Kirk movie era and the Next Generation. And you get little bits of flashbacks. Like, you see, like, a flashback of Jack Crusher. You see the Enterprise C in that episode. And you get these weird transitional form uniforms where it looks a bit like it would be the Kirk uniform with these gradual changes, like Picard in the episode Tapestry, where he's kind of quantum leaped into his Academy days with Q. And like the collar, the turtleneck collar is gone and the belt is gone. No, I think he still has the belt in the Academy days, but Jack Crusher doesn't have the belt. Or
honestly, I just chalk those all up to costuming issues. I assume that those are all supposed to represent the same uniform.
And occasionally you get a budget with the Enterprise C. The Enterprise C episode, yesterday's Enterprise, it has I think it's like a 20-year back Enterprise. Mm-hmm. The one budget costuming thing that drives me crazy every time I see that is, you know, the pins that you used to have on the Kirk movie uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
The main guy, the second in command who makes friends with
Shooter McGavin.
Shooter McGavin.
Yep.
He does not have a pin on his uniform, and it drives me crazy. Can you take it off one of the background guys?
He lost it.
I mean, it's so weird, and it's jarring to me that he doesn't have it on, because it's one thing if a background character has it, like, dude, I get it. Mm-hmm. You only have so much. Maybe you had to go into the archive, and we haven't made one of those era movies since 1991, and maybe we threw a lot of that stuff down or melted it down or gave it away. Because I guarantee you, after Star Trek VI is gone...
Well, I bet you a lot of those walked away.
Those disappeared.
Sure.
If I worked on Star Trek VI, you know, The Undiscovered Country, I would walk away with one of those.
Okay,
pins.
Okay, so this is a.
But he doesn't have one, and he's a principal character, and it drives me mad.
This is a deep cut for Radio versus the Martians listeners. In Valverde, there are actually two, not one, but two artifacts stolen off of Star Trek TV sets. They're both staplers. One of them is from the Voyager's writing room, and the other is from the Enterprise's writing room. But we have pilfered Star Trek memorabilia. I don't know where it's in the cupboard over there or something. But yeah, that shit has got to happen all the time.
Take it from us, Paramount lawyers. But
I'll just peel the tape off.
I'm curious to know the provenance of those, but you might not want to disclose on the
not on Mike, not on Mike.
There was a particular uniform that makes me really sad in the modern era of Star Trek. And it's not because I don't like it. It's because I love it. There's another lost era. And that lost era is between Star Trek Nemesis and the beginning of the new era of Star Trek with Picard.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flashback uniform that Picard wears when him and Michelle Hurd are in these uniforms and Picard is an admiral. And I fucking love that uniform so much. And it's for an era that we're not making TV shows in. And it's mm-hmm. better than the modern 25th century uniform.
Wait, what show was this on?
This is on Picard, season one.
Probably like the second episode.
Okay. And that uniform is so fucking good. And it makes me so mad that they put it in an era that doesn't have TV. And that if they just swapped those around, they took the 25th uniform and put it on them then, and then took those uniforms and put them on 25th century officers, it is so good. And I'm like, I would have been so fucking proud if I designed that uniform, because Michelle Hurd is in the gold, you know, sort of operations uniform, and Picard is in the admiral uniform, which is red, but it has this extra line of gold, the striping on it.
Oh, no,
I
remember.
It is fucking gorgeous. Yeah. And I'm like, why aren't those not the standard uniforms? You know, if you just have to do something, just put them in the gray First Contact uniforms. Well,
Picard's another one where they've had like 100 different variations on the uniform. Because they've, like, each season they're wearing a different, you know, Starfleet wears a different uniform. Because you've got a different showrunner that wants to put their stamp on the show each season. And then you have, like, Picard, who's not active in Starfleet, so he's always wearing something that vaguely evokes a Starfleet uniform, but it's not a Starfleet uniform. And then you have, like, Riker wearing, like, a leather jacket, and then that leather jacket's so popular that they decide to outfit everybody on the show in leather jackets. And then you have flashbacks to eras where they're wearing like a variation of like the Lower Decks uniform or like a variation of that uniform from the first season of Picard, and it's just such a mishmash. You think that like they're wearing that the motion picture or the Wrath of Khan uniform, they wore it for like 80 years, and then now between the start of the Next Generation and where we are in Picard, like there's a different uniform almost like every year.
It's like there's a Project Runway that happens every single year, and the winner gets to be on Starfleet, and it never gets fully implemented before the next uniform comes.
Yeah, so there's you go to Starfleet Academy for costuming, right? And then you got to have the competition every year. That's what you do, obviously.
You know what it is? Is it's soccer jerseys. Every year there's a new one.
Sure.
And there's two or three in rotation at any given time. You've got your basic uniform, your alternate uniform, and every other year you update one of them.
Well, no, they've definitely established that there is the standard uniform and the dress uniform.
And the captain's uniform.
Well,
the captain's kind of like an alternate.
Like the Kirk casual coat, you know, they got like a nice warm jacket,
like
the green wraparound.
Yeah, that like sort of Hugh Hefner vibe that Kirk would wear. I kind of dig that one. I think that I've seen footage of Pike wearing that and Anson Mount wearing a variation on that green wraparound one, and it's like people love that thing. But Picard also had another alternate captain's uniform in the episode where he's trapped on that planet and he has to learn a common language with this alien.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, something with the walls fell.
Kind of like a red velvet with like padded leather shoulders.
Yeah.
And black. And then underneath that is what looks like a standard uniform, but gray.
Yes. It's so strange, but it looks cool. And I only think he wore it like two or three times.
I think he wore it a bunch. He wore it a bunch in those later.
I think after that show, they brought it back for definitely a few times, but normally for away missions.
The same thing happened when they switched over to the First Contact uniform. There's that staggered, you know, adoption of a new thing. Like there's an episode in, I don't know if it happened on, you know, Worf and Dax's wedding, but a lot of the Starfleet officers show up wearing a dress uniform,
mm-hmm.
but it's a TNG dress uniform, the old one, mm-hmm. the one that looks like a more fancy version of the standard Next Generation uniform. And then starting with Nemesis and Riker and Troy's wedding, we create the white dress uniform.
Yes, mm-hmm. like that's a Navy thing, right?
Yeah,
the Navy. This is what the fascinating part about it is throughout the history of sort of the renovation of this, there have been these attempts to sort of like make it seem more like the American Navy. So, you know, Robert Weiss, is that who did two? Who did two? Who did?
Nicholas Meyer.
Nicholas Meyer was big on being like, I want to make this more of like a submarine movie. Well,
two and six were both Nicholas Meyer.
Right.
And so they both kind of.
And when they changed the uniform, it was to reflect of like, well, in the actual Navy, everyone's wearing pretty much the same color. And there's like kind of like epaulets on their shoulders. And like to look at more like Navy, like when they did Enterprise, they wanted to. Those were obviously based off of like jumpers from the Navy, from submarines.
But also NASA.
Yeah.
Right. And then with the white dress uniforms in Nemesis, it's sort of like those look like exactly like the white dress uniforms that Navy officers have, at least maybe like in the 20th century. So they're always going back to being like, well, let's make it more Navy like to ground them a little more. Otherwise, they start becoming silver spandex.
I think DS9 had a moment, or a little bit, where the admirals were still wearing the...
Yeah, I was going to say, so they upgraded everybody's uniform except for the admiral. So the admiral was wearing the old TNG admiral style uniform.
Which there were five of those, too.
There were a bunch of those. Some with like weird diagonal stripes across the chest and stuff.
Just weird stuff.
But then after two or three episodes, he gets a new upgraded uniform that's got some extra stripes on it.
Like, what was the name of the admiral that is always hanging out with Sisko on there? He's like running the Dominion War with him.
Oh, yeah.
Figured out that the thing that changed the admiral's uniform, when you have different pips on your collar, mm-hmm. but you have this belt with a large buckle, and that belt becomes the symbol of an admiral. So when those like genetically,
that's when your gut is a little bit bigger, so you need the belt to hide.
To break it up visually, yeah.
But I think that's also something that you kind of have to do with a lot of these Star Trek uniforms. Is that Star Trek uniforms are not very consistent at being flattering on all body types,
right?
And some of them are. Like I think the First Contact uniforms look really good on most people. And I think that a lot of the uniforms, particularly the original series, look really, really good on Hollywood beautiful people. Mm-hmm. The people that Hollywood puts in movies. But if you want to, like, I would look terrible in an original series uniform. I'd look like a sausage. But I think I would look pretty good in some of the jumpsuit-y uniforms. I could put on an Enterprise uniform. And the thing is, if a show's on long enough, your actors are going to age. And part of aging is that you shouldn't wear necessarily the first season of TNG's uniform because it'll kill your back.
Yeah, that was what I was reading, is that after standing around in spandex pulling down on your spine for like 12 hours, everyone just had sore backs for every day. Can you imagine that? It's so uncomfortable.
You just like you're walking around with a rubber band tying your heels to your shoulders.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it just like you have to be able to age gracefully. That's one of the things I love about the sort of red movie uniforms, because they allow you to age.
They were all carrying a little bit of a gun underneath.
Yeah, you're allowed to gain some weight like a human being does. And like it looks good on Scotty, it looks good on Kirk, it looks good on Uhura. And the other thing is there are division colors on those uniforms that I didn't notice until fairly recently. It's the shirt color underneath.
The undershirt.
Yeah.
And it's the strap that goes across the shoulder that holds the flap there that has the rank on it. And there is these different, like, white. And also the stripe on the side of your pants matches that.
Right.
Really? Okay.
So, but when it's white, it's a red stripe, mm-hmm. weirdly. So it's like red for cadet, white for command, sort of a greenish gray for medical. I forget the ones are. They're sort of a purplish gray that both Chekov and Uhura have. And I think there's kind of a grayish, plain gray. But then mustard yellow is what Scotty has for like both the strap on his shoulder and the collar.
There's like twice as many different divisions. There's a different one for science and for medical rather than them both being the same.
Exactly. And then weirdly enough, though, when Scotty wears the utility vest uniform, instead of wearing a mustard yellow one like he does in his standard uniform, he wears a white shirt, mm-hmm. but he still has a yellow stripe on his pants.
In his kind of like Han Solo uniform.
Yeah, it is kind of a Han Solo uniform. But I think that's one thing they kind of figured out, is that people were wearing sort of those radiation suits down in engineering. And you'd see Scotty in one of those sort of ribbed Michelin mm-hmm. man type uniforms. But then giving him the vest, it looked more comfortable too.
So. Yeah, I'm sure the Scotty thing was just a consideration of the fact that he was the fattest out of all of the original series actors. And so you had to have him have a more flattering outfit. You know, that's why he got the vest.
And he looks good at
it. Yeah, he looks fine. Scotty's uniform. What are you going to do?
You have to have a sort of, again, if you create a uniform that accommodates a number of body types, it's a better uniform all around, because you're going to get a bunch of actors, and you know what? When you get an admiral in the show, chances are they're going to be a little bit older. And you know what? When you go over age 30, I'm sorry, but it's a lot harder to stay skinny than it used to be. And I never stayed skinny, and it's even harder now. But yeah, I think it's like,
is that because of the nanobots?
I think it is the nanobots from the vaccine, but, I don't really mean that, folks. but I was kind of, I'm just fascinated by this desire, and you mentioned it too, when there's a new showrunner, why we need the signature uniform. Like on Lower Decks, there's a new uniform that the characters have. And I know it takes place after, it's in that sort of Lost era, in between Star Trek Nemesis and, you know, Picard. But then the USS Titan shows up and it's Riker in the gray First Contact uniform.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And
that's just because that's the one he likes the best. He's like, this has always been my favorite.
Oh, and another thing that Lower Decks introduced that was cool is they started putting the colored stripes on the ships themselves.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, wow. I didn't notice
so
that.
So I think, the Cerritos has, a yellow stripe on it to signify that they're a second contact ship. Their role in the is different from, a command-level exploration and flagship type that would have a red stripe on it. And I don't know how I don't know if they're using that anywhere other than on Lower Decks at this point, but it was a kind of a novel evolution of the uniform onto the ships themselves.
But it's an interesting bit of world building that you have these shows that aren't necessarily talking to each other, but at the same time, I guess in a world where it feels like every, like Star Wars for instance, has what they call their story group, mm-hmm. where there's just these probably like UN negotiated type meetings where they decide what is and isn't canon. And it feels like that isn't happening with Star Trek, and it creates some confusion, but I think it also makes a wide open space for people to make decisions that don't necessarily match with others, but lets them put their own stamp on things. So I think I kind of prefer that.
I have heard them mention that there is some interaction when they comes to we want to use this character, do you have any plans for him? Actually, we've already used him, so you can't use him. So I think that came up. I heard it mentioned in terms of both Lower Decks and Picard wanted to use Wesley Crusher at some point, and Picard was like, no, we get to use Wesley Crusher. He was a Next Generation character.
They kind of
pulled rank.
Have they
so
used
to speak.
Him on Picard yet?
He showed up in one scene.
Okay. Because I was wondering,
does he get to do some fucking insane kung fu?
No, it was kind of underwhelming.
Oh.
Does he still have the traveler powers?
I wanted it to be like the last scene in Akira where he just shows up and starts, his body just starts going,
just takes over the ship.
Yes.
That would.
There's still a big reveal coming in the most recent or the current season of Picard, and I'm really hoping that it has to do with Wesley Crusher.
The death of Wesley Crusher. Or...
There's some MacGuffin hiding behind a red door, and they haven't opened the door yet, and they've been teasing it for six long episodes. And I hope it's finally just Wesley Crusher be ta-da!
Radio vs. the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Doran, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobiah Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just $1 a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Lieutenant, actually, I didn't want to push my luck.
Looks good on you, sir.
Thank you, Ensign.
Wait a minute, aren't you two wearing the wrong color?
Don't you know anything about this period in time?
I'm a doctor, not an historian.
In the old days, operations officers wore red, command officers wore gold.
And women wore less.
I think I'm going to like history.